to listen to another soul into a condition of disclosure and discovery may be almost the greatest service that any human being ever performs for another. To listen. I spend at least 95% of my time listening to patients and their families. It's work for me. I'm not, I'm not an introverted person at all. So for me to keep quiet and to listen and not respond immediately, and when I do respond, to try to dig deep and find out where I am with that and how I can respond from a place that supports the other person and where they are. Regardless of the concern, how we communicate can enhance feelings of distress, or it can enhance feelings of wellness. Each of us can contribute to this dynamic, either way, by how we listen, speak, and touch someone. Regardless of the concern, how we communicate can be a reflection of how we care for one another, how we spiritually, faithfully relate to one another. So spirituality. Spirituality is the context from where we express our faith. When we care for someone, we are not, this is hard sometimes, we are not addressing their doctrinal understanding of the church. Perhaps if we look at understanding that doctrine is the way that the institution of the church makes its meaning. Prayerful conversation calls us to hear how someone else makes meaning or seeks meaning themselves, and to let go to God and their encounter with God. Spirituality is the mysterious part of us that exists without definition. There's no single definition. And for some people, it might indeed be the doctrine of the church, and that may be how you hear it, and that may be where somebody finds their safety. Whatever it is, whatever our spirituality is and how we speak of it, it's what actually grounds us. It's what takes us through the day. It's what helps us cope. It's what helps us make decisions. So when somebody is telling you from their heart how they feel about death, they've come to that decision or are trying to come to that decision from their own spirituality, and that's where you need to hear. Letting go in a conversation about dying. You need to be aware of your own fears, your own assumptions, your own decisions, and your own beliefs. All of those are yours, and they are beloved and good and loved by God. And if you know this in your heart, you can have difficult conversations, for you will be able to better hear the other person, and you will be able to respect their journey and their differences. All of that is hard work. We make sense of hearing decision-making about assisted dying from our faith. We ask ourselves how the self-giving Christ comes to be in our conversations. We witness love to the world. Our awareness that God is all in all. Our one moment of conversation, God is there, and God is there in every single moment of conversation. So elements of our spiritual dimension are our sense of meaning, our purpose in life, our ability to transcend sense of self, our active personal set of values, and our ability to express, experience love, hope, forgiveness, and trust. So that old adage about self-care, it's really true, and it does help you to listen. elements of spiritual distress enter our conversations when? So when conversations become difficult. Self-concern regarding meaning of life or belief system. Anger towards God. Decreased participation in expression of personal religious belief or practice. So we need to have all those difficult conversations with ourselves. Questions regarding moral or ethical implications of actions. Sometimes when people are telling you the top part of their conversation, there's something else going on underneath. And part of hearing and responding to a difficult conversation is to help the other person, not you, the other person get down there where it's difficult for them and where their spiritual distress might be. To move from spiritual distress to wellness in conversation is to seek understanding that life is good. It is good. Life and death share meaning. Living well together is about trust, hope, and reassurance. To pastorally care for another, to communicate faithfully within difficult conversations, requires intentionality. The biggest communication problem is we do not listen to understand. We listen to reply. Yeah, I do that a lot. Why are conversations difficult? Because they can be reminders of our own mortality, our vulnerability. They can touch upon deeply held values. And when you push against those, when somebody close to you especially pushes against your own personally held value, it's really hard to listen and it's hard to enter into that conversation. A difficult conversation can highlight potential conflicts of values and morality that can surprise you. They can be perceived as an intrusion of privacy. They can touch upon images of self-worth and be perceived as reflection or affirmation of social value or position. And they can also highlight clashes of belief and culture. Intentional communication can encourage health and wellness by social support and interaction may enhance wellness by allowing for a therapeutic expression. So to help people express this, emotion, fear, anxiety, unknowing. Through the psychodynamics of faith, if you believe you are blessed, you may experience blessing. If you feel unworthy, you may experience spiritual distress. And so to engage in difficult conversations with others, we must be aware of our own values, our faith, our spirituality, be willing to share non-judgmentally our own stories, experiences, and life lessons. Non-judgmentally, so not part of advice, but a sharing so people can hear and help find their own. Build bridges between the stories that we hear and the stories and teachings of Christ. Intentionally develop our skills for sacred communication. There are many frailties in conversation. We hear three times faster than we speak, and so we often anticipate what will be said and what will not be said. And so we all run the risk of becoming distracted or bored, and so then we stop listening. We only hear about 20% of what is said. The rest is filtered out. That's 80% by personal interest, disinterest, distraction, memory loss, perceptions, or attitude. So you can imagine somebody like me who thinks by talking, to listen and not reply immediately, to talk about what I'm hearing, it's difficult, and I mean, I'm not the only person that happens to. For folks that think within their head, there's so many thoughts going on that quite often we don't hear what somebody is saying to us. Within the context of conversation, the average attention span of an adult is 4 to 7 seconds before we begin to formulate an answer. The unspoken priority of most adults in a conversation is to respond by her or his opinion, decision, suggestion, before hearing and absorbing the entirety of what is being said. Communication experts tell us that, since we began, some of you have already formed an opinion as to the usefulness of this talk, this workshop to you. Some of you have simply stopped listening to me. Some of you are stopped in deep discouragement and disagreement. Some of you have decided there's really nothing useful at all to learn here. And some of you might be intrigued and engaged by the topic. And some of you are already thinking of ways to integrate, that would be great, to integrate this new information into your way of thinking and communicating. To listen. To listen is a choice, absolutely. It's a choice and it is intentional. Listening is not passive. It is a gift given to others. Listening is an art. Listening is a vocation. The practice of listening. Become aware of opportunities for listening. Sometimes, well, one person might be reading a book. The other one comes up and just starts to talk, seems to be interrupting you. But it's because you're sitting quietly. That's an opportunity. Be aware of what happens when you choose to listen. Slow down. Declutter in order to listen. Prepare for the gift of listening. Open your heart and mind to the presence of God with you, with both of you. Observe others in conversation and look for the practice of sacred listening. Listen to yourself and your soul. Listen without, this is hard, listen without expectation. And be fully present in your listening. Sacred speaking. Sacred speech opens doors. Sacred speech takes risks. Sacred speech contains more love than fear, more unknownness than knowledge. And sacred speech is not defensive. It is not presupposing. Sacred speech is grounded in belief, but does not impose belief. Sacred speech is good and virtuous, not proud, but humble. Sacred speech is creaturely. It is common. It is accessible. It touches someone. Sacred speech is driven by the Holy Spirit, and it is always, always grounded within a community of faith. The acknowledgement of the presence of God in the words that we use is one of the biggest markers that we can have. The maximization of the possibility of love and caring. There is a bridging between and comforting of fear. Sacred speech, then, is about linkage, connection, contact. Sacred speech builds bridges. Sacred speech connects life and death with faith. Thus, when you are listening, suspend your assumptions. When you speak, express your personal response, informed by your tradition, your belief, and your practice. Be the real you. Be vulnerable and open. Speak and listen, though, without judgment of the other person. Do not speak until she, he, they are finished. Suspend status. We are all, you are all equal in conversation. Listen for understanding of the other, not agreement. Honor silence. Honor trust. Assume trust always. thus. Begin with God. Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from far away. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, O Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is so high that I cannot attain it. Difficult conversations start with God. Most of the Psalms are times of difficult conversations. O God, you have searched me and known me. I know I am journeying from this world. Will I endure? If I am in pain and want to escape, may I choose death? I know that you are with me, even here, even now, for you search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. You will find me wherever I am in my thoughts and call me to listen. Please tell me, what must I do with suffering, with pain, with loss? What will happen to me as I leave this body and come to rest and joy? You know my question before I ask, but I need to ask. I am praying. Are you listening to me? It is with wonder that I know you are. Help me find my way. I seek to show you my love for the goodness of life, but I am unsure. I want to endure the path ahead. Help me know what is right for me. I know you will find me, but I don't want to lose myself. I do not want to be in my body and yet painfully, spiritually separate from my body. I want to know the people I love and who love me are here. I fear to share these thoughts with them. Yet I know you ask me to share my life. How do I share my death? Please do not call me wicked for my questions. I fear one day I will not even be able to know my own questions. You set life in front of me. You did not remove obstacles, but delighted in me finding my own way. You loved me and healed me over and over. You taught me to live well with the world, and so you rejoiced in my community. You gave me hope. You lifted my spirit to the sunrise, and my darkness became your light. You called me to see your joy and to surrender. I am seeing my desire to fully surrender now while I know my path. You gave me home, O God, in this body. As I was formed in the safety of my mother's womb, I was hidden from my family and those who awaited my arrival. But you knew all of me. You knew not only my soul, but my body, both fragile and marvelous. You gave me breathing life to explore and set me free with choices to live the life you gave me. Mine is a life and body co-created with you. Mine is a life you called to live with community. You bring life into being, but you let us journey together and alone to find your path before us, knowing us more deeply than we know ourselves, for all life is your story, and your story is everlasting, time beyond our hours. I find comfort there, knowing I am part of life that is more than my body and mind in pain. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is so high that I cannot attain it. I am grateful you are with me. Would I be denying gratitude to give up something you have given me? You know my thoughts inside and out. Before I can even face them, how can I turn to my pain? May I bring it to you? I know you already have my pain. Will you take it all now? Having faith seems to make all my questions sacred and blasphemous. Will my community and my family listen? Will they uphold me, my life, my desires to you? May I ascend to heaven without waiting for the moment my body, the home you gave me, releases me. Is that a path, a choice you place before me too? Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. Where would you go with that conversation? Can any of you put anything into words? I know that's hard. And I know I threw a lot of words at you. From a physician's point of view, and I think that we would put it in terms of the Abrahamic point of view, with the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill. What do we do with that commandment? What do they do with it, and how do we help them? Do you have an answer for that? I don't know that I have an absolute answer for that, but I do not feel that anybody should be personally moved into that space where, for them, their personal belief is that it is killing someone. And as a chaplain, my work is to listen to that and to hold that, but also to say to someone that what their belief is and how they would see that is not where the person is that's asking them for care, for help and support. And so we still need to find a way of supporting the patient and not telling them that it's wrong. So they're two separate people that we need to care for.
Exactly. Yes. Okay, so my question was related more to the point of view of the physician. And for those of you who didn't hear my question initially, I just wanted to say that last week I was at a lecture at Wycliffe College by what I believe was the Christian... Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, much better. The Christian Doctors Association, and they were struggling with the issue of whether they have the right to be conscientious objectors, and if they do have that right, do they also have the right to refuse to make a referral? Because they feel that in making a referral, they're complicit. So out of all of that came my question of what do we do with thou shalt not kill?
There are institutions and health facilities that are developing protocols to capture those kind of concerns. And it will only take time to work that out with all of its nuance and subtlety. Because there's as equally a valid argument in those who suggest that if you even aren't willing to make a referral and the question is asked of you, does that constitute harm being done by you to the person asking the question because you're not going to refer them to people who can help them problem solve their way through to whatever the most appropriate solution is?
And I mean, it because in a lot of ways is very, very close to abortion. Certainly not all physicians who work with women and infants health will do that, but they refer it on. And for some, it's a care. It's a mode of helping somebody. And for others, it's killing. I would never think that I would argue with that. However, I do believe strongly that if you are in the business of working in a hospital, and your hospital and providing care for people, you have to find a way of helping them and understanding that it's their decision to do what they need to do. And so referring on I guess I'm pretty stubborn about that. I think they need to do that.